Hello, everybody. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 20 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Injury Podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Dara McAnthony, Chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. And Dara, you're back in the States. You came home last week, I think.
Yeah, I got home on Friday. I was obviously had to go to an art thing with my son this weekend. Thursday night. That's when I got home. Sorry, I'm losing track of days here. So Thursday night, yeah. Obviously, weekend. Working and with my family, and obviously back in the office today. It's been a whirlwind fucking weekend, because obviously I needed to be back because I wanted to concentrate and stuff to do with my son this weekend and the art show and all that, you know. But football, as usual, has a nasty way of getting in the way of all of that, as it did. So yeah, last time we spoke, obviously, you know, it was before I think we played Port Vale on TV.
It was, yeah.
Let's start with a positive. That was a really good win, at a tough place. And by the way, their pitch was like, you know, tough. It was like,
I watched that because with it being on Sky, it was on the ESPN over here as well.
Yeah, it was tough. But I thought, you know, we were comfortable winners. I thought, you know, we played at a very, the experienced players showed up, you know, which is what we've needed and what we need for the last half of the season is we know how good they can be. I thought they handled the game very well.
It looked like confidence grew as the game went on. You know, at the beginning, probably the first half, decision making, you could question some of the decisions that were made, and then second half, you know, and you get the goal and it became a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, you're right. It's the nervousness of having not won away for a while, having not won games, I would imagine there was a lot of anxiety. As much as the players believe in themselves, you're still going to have those anxious moments. Port Vale are no mugs. They're doing very well this season. Their home form has picked up. You know, it was an important game, and it didn't need to be spectacular. It didn't need to be some sort of a statement. It just needed to be go and win. You know, if you can get a clean sheet, even better. If you can score a couple of goals, even better to that. So from that perspective, I thought they worked hard. It was a good game plan, won the game. The goalie, you know, new goalie, made a very critical save early on. Then he didn't need to do anything else for the rest of the game. I thought it was marshaled pretty well. So Efron Clark again stepping up and showing, you know, he was a good acquisition in the summer, and playing a bit more of a forward role than maybe a wide role. And he's definitely, we've always said when we signed him, he could have been a number nine as well. He has that ability because he's got goals in him. So, it was, and amazingly, I think only one sub made. So usually we made like five subs, you know, 20 minutes to go or whatever. So anyway, you know, the manager's got his feet under the table. He's working hard. He was gutted about Saturday. He was looking forward to it. You know, two teams in semi-form chart and won a few games. We would have won 2 and 3, you know, it would have been a decent game. So we're off to Burton tomorrow. They're no mugs either. That's a tough place to travel to, you know. We're hoping, obviously, the game is on, because this has just been an unmitigated disaster, I think, across the UK with lots of games called off. And obviously, let's talk about Saturday.
So Saturday, for context, for those who don't know, the game was called off against Charlton. It was called off at pretty late notice, I think maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before kickoff. And that's not unusual for grounds around the country this weekend, but I know it created a bit of a, to put it nicely, a bit of a storm.
You know, sometimes you feel like you kill the black cat or something, you know, it's just like the hits keep on coming. But I just want to make it clear that I don't want anyone from the press in Peterborough or Charlton taking words out of context, printing stuff that's salacious, making things that aren't there. You know, I'm going to go through some bits. Some I can't go. We're having a full investigation. We're talking to, you know, the pitch company, all the rest of it about, you know, the events on Saturday and what should have happened and shouldn't have happened. But look, the reality is with 90 minutes to go, I'm watching the Liverpool-Chelsea game like 7:30 in the morning in Florida. It was about an hour and a half. Liz rings my phone. And I know when Liz is ringing my phone on an hour and a half to go to a kickoff, it's not good news.
And Liz is the club secretary.
She is. So she tells me the news. Obviously, then the manager is texting me, can we speak? He has his bit to say. And then I'll speak to the CEO. I want to get to the bottom of it. And then about an hour and a half later, my wife says to me, what's going on? Do you see the amount of abuse you're getting on Twitter? And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, well, I've reported about 20. I'm like, you got to stop reporting people on Twitter. Like, I understand you're getting defending me, whatever, but there's no need. But yeah, I mean, I was just getting absolutely fucking battered. Again, I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea, you know, as much as, yeah, you're the owner of a club, you know, you're not, there's so much you can do and there's so much you don't do. You have people that work for you and you've, you know, contracts with companies that do things. So look, the reality is our covers were on all week from Wednesday. The groundsman stayed all night long, slept overnight, Friday and Saturday. He put lights, the covers, everything was good to go. And then I think I want to say on Saturday morning or whatever else, he checked the forecast. He was happy with the pitch and the covers came off, the lights, and the forecast changed. And within a few hours, the certain area of the pitch, which is where it doesn't get the best light, we've had issues before, it would flood in with damage to the pitch with some of the things down there because it doesn't get light, it froze up. And obviously then it's Harry Carey, it's everyone, like, you know, the ref wants to see the pitch, people are over that side. So what's happening now is obviously the club are speaking to the pitch company. We employ a pitch company who does the special pitches we have. We did them at the training ground in our stadium. No passing the book here, by the way. It's no blame game here. But I have to go and investigate and go into it thoroughly. They employ all the staff who take care of the pitches. So I have to deal with that company now as regards to everything that happened on Saturday or what didn't happen or what did happen and go through that process. That's no consolation to Charlton, to their fans, to their manager. Our players, you know, we wanted to play the game. This nonsense about we had injured players. It was the same team to beat Port Vale that we're playing, I believe. It's a home game. You know, we've got a big income. There's 2,000 or 1,800 Charlton fans coming. It's a decent game on a Saturday. Of course you want to play. My manager is devastated. So this has happened to lots of other clubs up and down the country. I've seen it. You know, there were games called off late. I think Chelsea and Liverpool's ladies started playing. They were 6 minutes in. We paid for staff for the day. We paid for food for the day. You know, you've no idea. It's a six-figure disaster for us on Saturday. And that's something any club in League One doesn't need. Be like, you know, after having the shit kicked out against
somebody. That's a transfer fee for a new player, is that, isn't it?
Yeah, I said to the gaffer earlier, that was his transfer budget for a couple of players till the end of the season. They're gone. He's like, what? I'm like, you know, I said, I've got to like bus in people from, you know. So then I was like looking it over again, and obviously I was getting a lot of abuse, but I understood there were a lot of frustrated Charlton fans who travel a long way. The ones who got a bit personal and were this, that, whatever else, that, you know, there's a way, I've always said this, there's a way to deal with things, and that's not the way. So I basically rang my partner, Jason. I said, look, this isn't a normal thing, but I think it's the right thing, considering how late it went and how many people were traveling. And of course, it's not going to make up for people who are saying they stopped off for lunch and they did this and they spent 200 quid and did it. We can't do that. But what we can do is we can offer to put on, I said, my suggestion is we put on some coaches. Not all 1,600 Charlton fans that bought a ticket will probably take us up on the offer. But those who do, we will coach in for the rearranged tie. No consolation to the football team of Charlton or their manager, but maybe to their fans, it will help a little bit. I understand at this time, you know, with the economy not being great and people struggling, you know, the cost of living. I felt, and I said to Jason, me and him will cover the cost. That's probably going to cost us 35 grand, depending on the amount of coaches. But it's the right thing to do. And that's all I could do is that was my, I don't know what else to do. A lot of people were saying and whatever, right? Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Did it then. I'm like, well, no, I think it's the right thing to do. So we're doing that. For the posh fans that were inconvenienced, we're going to come up with something for them. That's a little bit easier because they're season ticket holders, the merchandise in the club, other games. With Charlton fans, it wasn't so easy to come up with a perfect, not a perfect solution, but some sort of an alternative. So what can I say? You know, at the end of the day, you know, you can make excuses. You can blame other people. No, look, the game didn't go ahead. Too many fans were on their way there. Too many fans were probably already there. It was a big inconvenience. Maybe we, as an industry, have to look at games, you know, weather, certain situations. You know, it rarely happens. Now, people are talking about, why don't you have undersoil heating? You know, very few League One and League Two clubs have undersoil heating. I mean, you're talking about seven figures to put it in. You're talking about electricity bills at the current energy prices. You couldn't afford to run that in our leagues. So that's just not going to happen. We're not Premier League. Yeah, I felt awful. The trolling and the stuff on Twitter doesn't bother me. It bothers my wife more, you know what I mean? But it's always the same. And then you get some fans of our club who aren't fans of me use this as a situation again to pile on and go, you know, the club's run and did it. And it's just like, forget me. If you're a fan of the football club, just be a fan of the football club. Not everything that happens is, you know, always a case of, oh, this is how badly the run the football club is, and this is that. It's, you know, just, you know, when you're down and people just want to keep kicking and piling on. It's been one of them months where I've taken a lot of names, put it that way. You know, where you like things change, and it's not just I'm talking about trolls and fans, I'm talking about other things within football. And you know, I've been taking names this month, that's for sure.
You know who your friends are.
I've always known they weren't friends or whatever else, but some of the stuff I see seen this month, some of the activity, some of the, you know, I could write a book on it, you know, so that'll be further on down the line. But I'm definitely taking names, and I'm looking forward to dishing out, you know, when the time comes. So, but yeah, so is what it is. You can apologize so many times. What else can you say? I can't give blood.
No, it's kind of out of your, I mean, it's not a consolation, I understand, for fans who traveled, but there's only so much that's in your control. It happened up and down the country. Our game was called off relatively late. You know, we were playing Carlisle. Carlisle fans already on the way. I mean, it's just it's the nature of playing football in the winter with, and there's only so much you can do. And it's a occupational hazard of being a football fan in some way, shape or form, is there's always a risk of it happening. And of course, when it is, you want to have as much notice as you possibly can. But at the end of the day, there's not much you can do to change it. There's how you respond, and you probably went above and beyond, and some people might not think that, and you know, others may still have problems, but I'm
a football fan, you know. At the end of the day, I know some people like to play the narrative. Some people to do with Charlton from way back when were out there going, Darren McAnthony would have plenty to say about this if she was on the other foot, and da 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 da. I don't know why they're piling in. You know, we've had lots of clubs over the last couple of years pull COVID stuff, do whatever else. I haven't piled in of, you know, it's frustrating, but it is what it is, you know. So I guess they just think I'm a big mouth, and that's why they like, you know, like an opportunity to kind of go bang. At the end of the day, I'm a football fan. I genuinely felt for all the Charlton fans that traveled and had gone to great expense. I felt for Charlton football team, and I felt for my football team and my manager. So, and no one's going to feel for us for the six figures it's probably cost us as a catastrophe on Saturday. Okay, that's fine. Didn't rightly so, you know, whatever the circumstances around it are. I can just make sure it doesn't happen again. I'm now dealing with that. That's the other side of it. But nobody at the club, whether it be the secretary, the CEO, are responsible for what happened on Saturday as regards to the different events and leading up to it and the late call-off. They're not. So, you know, it's easy to blame people and whatever else, but they're not. They're not responsible. It's not their fault. So we can only learn from it, and we move on, and I'll do my bit for the away supporters for the rematch, and hopefully home fans will pack it out, because we need a bigger gate than the original home one, even on a Tuesday night, to try and, you know, go towards some of the catastrophic financial damage from that day. But yeah, it's just constant, Phil, honest to God. It's just like,
so Gary Neville had suggested having, you know, looking at having regulations around, or maybe regulations is not the right word, but more of a consistent protocol for what goes into whether a match should be called off or not. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm watching an NFL game last night in Buffalo, and, you know, they're playing, my missus is like, these people are playing in snow, there's snow. I'm like, yeah, different turf, different circumstances. I don't know what the answer is. Do you know what I mean? My brain's scrambled. I'm half jet lagged. I'm half like, Gary, regulators, regulations. I don't know. I don't know what the perfect thing is. I think it rarely happens. You know, we played 3-4 years ago in the snow, where Stephen Taylor was on the pitch with a shovel to get the game finished. You know, it rarely happens. Unfortunately, when it's -5 and -6 and it's a really bad, you know, run, you know, like I said to you, it's Saturday at 9 a.m. The pitch was absolutely fine, I was told. So, and again, you can follow forecasts, a bit like here with hurricanes in Florida, when we go, the hurricane's coming this way, that's the forecast. You know, the local authority here makes decisions based on that, and then it can change in 3 hours, and then it's like, okay, last minute, you got to do this. But when all is said and done, the criticism will follow anyway. Mm-hmm. Do you know where you got it wrong? You didn't get it wrong. You get what I mean? And it's like, it's very difficult to circumnavigate that. What you try and do is, you know, Do you try and call it up as quick as you can, as early as you can, but at the same time, you want the game on. You want, like, if there's an issue on the pitch in an area, you think, well, another hour, it's going to be fine. You try and mitigate it, because everyone wants the game on. You ask all the fans of Charlton who got there and say they're in the, and our fans, and say, look, hey guys, would you hang around with 4 p.m. kickoff if this, everyone would vote yes. You know, it's like, it's just one of them things. And then some of my fans having a go because our players decided to train on the pitch. Well, they needed to train. And, you know, 90% of the pitch was absolutely fine. And, you know, some people, again, sticking the knife in.
You know, That's exactly what happened at City as well. So after we called our game off, the players trained on the pitch because, again, it was just one part of the pitch that is always a bad area, that is one that has all the problems with, like, water and, you know, all the kind of same stuff that you've got going on is ours. And so they trained on it afterwards. I mean, the keeper said he'd play on a car park, so he was happy to play on anything.
Yeah.
The players just wanted to play.
Yeah.
So I think for us, they were just as frustrated as everybody else too.
I get it, you know, like a hard pitch is dangerous, but I looked at us playing at Port Vale and you were, you know, God bless them because the pitch problems they've had and whatever, it was like a few years ago. You saw it was like you were quagmire, which is more dangerous, getting your feet and studs stuck in that or playing on a ball's, you know, pitch that's hard as whatever, or a pitch that's just rock hard. Because I don't know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago, they played, didn't they?
Right. We'd have played on all of them.
They played. So I don't know. Is it, you know, they seem to get on fine. There were very few rearrangements or late games called off from whatever years and years ago. Then 2 years ago, we had the whole COVID thing where everyone was taking a two-week sabbatical because someone had COVID. So it's just what you're dealing with all the time. So, you know, I just always say it's a learning episode. You know, so you just got to learn. And, you know, my thing on over the weekend to the staff, the team at the club was, you know, this is how we're going to deal with it. This is what we're going to do. And we're going to stand this up. And we have to hold our hands up regardless, whoever you want to blame. And what we have to do is learn from this and put in a situation where that can't happen again. Well, there has to be a backstop. So, again, you know, I've had that sent over to me today, the backstop. So this never happens again, you know. But again, like, you know, some of the things being said about clubs run and this now, it's just the one thing I can always say, hand on heart, is I've got amazing staff at the football. Forget about the stars and the team, the manager, the promotions, behind the scenes, from communications to media to marketing to ticketing to catering to Liz being a secretary to safety, we have got phenomenal fucking people who never deserve criticism. They do such a magnificent job.
They never ask for it, did they?
And don't ask for it, you know, they get kicked in the bollocks like this and suddenly everyone's at them and they're unsung heroes, you know, and they're never paid as well as players or whatever else, but that's just the way it is at this level, as you know, at your club. And I'm always gutted for them more. Forget about the shite I get hit with. I'm gutted when they suddenly start getting your club's this and your club's that, you know. They have such pride in working for the football club, so it hurts. There were even previous employees putting stuff out on Twitter. It's just like, come on, like, leave it a fucking alone. Like, seriously, you know, stop. God, Jesus. Anyway.
So we are, a week away pretty much from transfer deadline. Are there any expected moves to be made? Or are you just kind of keeping the phone open to see what comes in, what opportunities may arise?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if there wasn't movement as regards to a couple of things happening. Players, you know, that people are interested in, and us then reacting to that and doing business. If that doesn't happen, there won't be a reaction from us. I don't think we're doing a lot of business. You know, we'd like another centre half, but from a budget perspective and financial fair play, because we're on the hook still for Cal Watts at the moment, we can't do that. So that's just football. That's the way it works. I'm going to try and speak to Aunt Dan Ashworth myself about that. You know, just because if the shoe was on the other foot and a non-league team came to me, you know, I would help them with that. One of our young players was injured. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to call him back. And, you know, we have a budget. Fortunately, a portion of it goes on the centre half. You know, the day after he signs, you know, he pulls a hamstring. You know, it's unfortunate, but sometimes you're at the mercy of big Premier League clubs and you ask for that. And a lot of them do it for you. Cardiff did it for us a few years ago. We've had it done. So we're going to ask, be at their mercy and ask again. And I think that would be one area. And then if anyone leaves or whatever, high value asset gets sold. Yeah, you would look to, you know, my recruitment with scouts, the manager I was on with him just before here, talking about that, going, right, if he left, this is what we're doing. This is how we're going to react. But we hate doing business in January, bringing people in. It's never brilliant. We're really happy to brought in Ogbeta. And what I like about that one is he's someone we tried to buy five times. Previous windows, and we brought in Jack Taylor, and we brought in Reece Brown, and we brought in Sammy. They're all players that were on our list of players to try and sign. So they weren't reaction signings. Don't get somebody last minute. That was calculated, you know, like Ogbeta was calculated. We tried to buy him 18 months ago. We tried to buy him 12 months ago. you know, in the end. Then we came back in at the end of the window, and then he went to Swansea. So, you know, it was always, you know, to the point we were trying to do a deal. So when we found out he was available and he was speaking to a couple of League One clubs around us, we were like, we're getting Norbs on the case, you know, from Shrewsbury. Darren, fair play to him, like, wouldn't give up on it. You know, the player, his parents, and then his dad came down, lovely boy, hasn't worked at Swansea. He's got a lot of great tangibles we think could be excellent left back, left wing back. Some help in there for Dan Butler. Dan's a warrior. You know, he's obviously come back from a very bad injury that's hurting him when he's not away from match days, his lack of training because of that injury, and he's done brilliant for us. But giving him a bit of support where he won't have to play 3-4 games a week, because he won't be able to, and allowing Harrison not to always be the backup left back or left wing back, he can move into midfield. So little things like Nathan Thompson was leaving before Darren came back. So, you know, Darren wanted him to stay because he's a leader. You know, if you listen to the interview after the game, you know, it's the leadership that Nathan brings and helps Jono with. So, yeah, again, no, there won't be, you know, there's been clubs in for Jack Marriott, but like loans and stuff like that. Unless somebody buys him, he won't leave. If he does leave, we'll bring someone else in. Stuff, by the way, that Darren's all aware of and agreeable with, do you know what I mean, and whatever else. But we've always said we're very happy with the squad we have. We have a lot of strength and depth. We have Norburn coming back, who's back on the grass, you know what I mean, on the 5th of Feb. He'll be playing under 23 games on the 12th and 15th, and he'll be here for the run in March onwards. You know, still a big batch of games. So, you know, Jando Fuchs didn't even make the bench against Port Vale. Joel Randall, you know, didn't make the bench against Port Vale. So, yeah, you know, there are, you know, Ricky, who's been man of the match in multiple games, didn't even come off the bench against Port Vale. So there is, I know the results haven't shown it. I know our inconsistency hasn't shown it, but there is some serious strength and depth in the squad. So, yeah. What about you guys? Are you going to do any business in January?
I'm not sure if we'll do it. I think we're kind of keeping our eyes open just to see if there's any opportunities that present themselves. It's been kind of interesting what we have done. So the last pod, we talked about losing Tyreek Wright.
Yes.
And Murphy actually scored, I think, for them the other day as well. We brought in Thierry Neves, who I'd not heard of before, from West Ham. He played at Wimbledon, which was our following game, and looked kind of a handful, but we'll see. I've only seen him for that one game. We brought in Adam Clayton from Doncaster until the end of the season.
Played for us.
Did he?
Yeah, years ago. Yeah, yeah. When he was a Leeds player.
Yeah.
We had Adam when he was only a youngster, like 19, 20. Very, very effective. You could tell he was going to have a good career. So how old is he now?
I think he's 34, 35, something like that. I think it's another one of get some leadership.
He likes an older one, doesn't he? He likes a 30-odd-year-old.
I know. He's going for surrounding himself with folks that make him feel a little bit younger, maybe. it's interesting as we look. Maybe it's the wage demands. You know, maybe it's, I mean, I know that he's been talked about leadership. Maybe he looks at leaders in the dressing room. We do miss now whether Adam Clayton is the person, time will tell. I don't know.
Oh, he's definitely a leader. He's definitely a driver. He's a leader. He's aggressive. He's a talker. You know, maybe Mark Hughes or Sparky, as I like to call him, is looking at, you know, final 20 games. It's kind of like the business end of the season. A couple of those heads in there is probably quite good for the younger lads you've got. So, you know, it's damned if you do and damned if you don't, if it doesn't work out.
And it's only to the end of the season. And then Taleji Bowler, I think his name is, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. From Rotherham. So I don't know anything about him at all. So I haven't seen him play yet either. So we'll see.
So all loans signing so far?
Yeah, pretty much, which we've actually got more loans than we can have in the squad now.
How many loans have you got?
I think we got 6 or 7. So we've been... unless they're going to try and convert one to a permanent, I'm not sure. Maybe there's some business to be done before the end of the window where one goes back that we know about. That I don't know. But it's been pretty heavy on loans this season.
Right. Have you played any games since we last spoke?
I can't remember when we last spoke. So we had, I don't know if it was after Rochdale. We lost at home to Rochdale.
Yeah.
Which was awful.
We didn't speak since then, I don't think.
Yeah, so we had an awful home 2-1 defeat, pitch like it was for you at Port Vale kind of game. Ian Henderson doing what Ian Henderson does twice.
I didn't think we left Salford to go back there.
Yeah, I'm not sure when that was. And he probably hasn't scored for for them until he comes to Valley Parade and he scores every time he plays us. They had all kinds of crazy runs, you know, they've been on not scoring, not winning. But we're always good for teams that are on bad runs.
I've heard that too. So you always feel that way when you're like getting the shit kicked out. Oh, team hasn't scored for 6 months. 2-0.
Yeah, bring team them
on. 4 years. There it goes.
Yeah. Everyone else dispatches them 4-0 and they come to Valley Parade.
Yeah.
But they walk it.
Do you think the team were a little bit arrogant and they're maybe thinking, you know, playing a Rochdale at that time, thinking, yeah, you know, we'll show up?
I mean, you'd like to think that they weren't, but I think it's just been a really weird winter too. It's stop, start with all these games, and it's hard to get into any momentum. And I don't know, they just showed up rusty. You know, they hadn't played for a couple of weeks and that you could tell.
So you haven't played since that Rochdale game?
We played Wimbledon then on the Saturday. We had Jamie Walker sent off in that one. So in the end it was...
Oh, a red card, yeah, Walker, yeah.
Yeah, it's like two yellows. I mean, he was rusty. It was just his first game back. His timing was out twice and probably is a bit of some silly challenges. But I mean, we saw that out, not particularly difficult, but we would want to win that game. So that was the last couple we played. And then we didn't play at the weekend. We're due tomorrow to play away at Stockport.
They're doing pretty well, aren't they?
They're doing now what we expected they would do at the start of the season.
By the way, who spoke about Arsenal winning the Premier League?
they're looking good, right?
Now obviously I'm a year early, but who was talking about how good Arsenal were with the recruitment, you know, last January in the summer? I think me? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, don't talk to me about Liverpool, but yeah, I mean, Arsenal are doing phenomenal. For now, I still think Man City will win the league.
You do? So it's the 5 points clear with the game in hand at the moment.
Let me tell you right now, they could be 10 points clear because I've seen Man City. I've seen this movie before. I've seen how many times. I'd like to see a graph of the last 5 years, the amount of times Man City from Jan, Feb onwards have won 15 games in a row. Yeah. So you can take your 5 points. You can take 10 points. Yeah. That's what they're like. And I got no doubt in my mind. And I'd love Arsenal to win the league. I think exciting, young players, everything I like. But Man City, I mean, yeah, Haaland, who they were criticizing last week, and he didn't play well in the Man United game, whatever. Yeah, he's already, matched the golden boot tallies from the last 4 years. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, yeah, unless, you know, Liverpool, they've got problems. Like, I watched their games against Brighton, Chelsea. The Brighton one was really, I was watching my Peacock link from when I've been in the UK using my VPN so I could, you know, get into my Peacock account in America because they got all the games. And I watched the Brighton game and I was so envious of Brighton's midfield against Liverpool. And very rarely as a Liverpool fan do you go, oh, I'm envy, unless you, you know, you're playing Man City. I mean, Phil, when I say Brighton were fucking unbelievable midfield-wise, I mean, that was probably the most one-sided game I've seen Liverpool play. They followed up beating Wolves in the Cup, but, you know, and then I watched the Chelsea game and I thought Chelsea were the better team again. And I don't want to call Gapco a bad signing so early. Mm. I've watched them for four games and I'm... So, you know, you can't judge too early. Give him another 4 or 5, maybe. I'm not sure he's top class. I hope that comes back to bite me on the arse, but I don't think he's quick enough. You know what I mean? So they've got problems there. The mighty Reds, I've always said, as long as we had Jurgen, we'd be fine. I'm not even sure the great mighty Jurgen can even pull this one out of the hat. It's not good. It's not good. Yeah, watch.
Ninth in the table at the moment, although it's, you know, there's only a couple of points with six, but that's still not challenging like you would expect and hope a Liverpool team would challenge.
They're not good away from home, Phil. They're as bad as posh away from home as regards to, like, you know, they've not picked up a lot of points away from home. You know, obviously they played at Anfield on Saturday and it's probably the least amount of shots I've seen, you know, at Anfield in a home game. They've got so many issues with their midfield. They've got a couple of young players doing really well and exceeding expectation. But I just think, with the issues they've got, yeah. I mean, if he pulls this around, fuck me almighty, he is a miracle worker. If he gets this lot into the... This isn't like a few years ago with all the defenders missing, because even then, you're the great midfield. You're that fucker. You know, you still had Salah, Mane, Firmino, you know, they're prime. But you're looking at it now and going, this isn't the Liverpool your parents knew, you know? It's So it is concerning from that perspective. But let's see what happens. You know, he won't give up, Jurgen Klopp. And we're playing Real Madrid in the Champions League. Our only hope, in my opinion.
It never gets easier to say.
I like the way you're looking at that. the only hope we've got is winning the Champions League to qualify for the Champions League. You know, so but I wouldn't put it past them. So let's wait and see. But for me, yeah.
What do you make of the FSG? Do we just want to sell a bit of the club, or do we want to sell all the club?
Well, I respect the fact that they're trying to do something, realizing that it's a different financial level, that they have to spend probably 200 million on midfield. You know, there is some serious surgery needed. You know, if you were to, they probably need three central midfielders in the summer. If 100 million and that's on Bellingham, you know, then it's 15. You are going to have to spend 200 million. They obviously, do they have the money? I think they do. Do they want to spend that money? No, they're not those kind of owners. I can't knock them. I think, you know, the training ground, everything they've done with the stadium, you know, they've had success, first title in 30 years. So I'm not going to get in that bandwagon. So I think what they're trying to do is find a happy medium of, well, if we're not going to sell it, and maybe there's no one out there who wants to spend 5-6 billion because you've got United and whatever else, well, then we'll sell maybe another 10 or 20% of the club to somebody who's got a leg up and a way in, a bit like the 49ers with Leeds. You know, they've got a percentage and it's an open door. And if that gets, you know, if the club's valued at, I don't know, 5 billion, and someone buys 20% and gives them a billion, you know, and they're going to take a lot of that themselves because it's their show. But maybe if they put 100 back in towards the transfer kitty or whatever, and the new party puts in, that could solve problems. But I think there's going to need to be patience for two windows. And I know they like to wait till the summer, but if I were them, they're going to need to start the repair of midfield in this window as well as the next window. Because if they're going to take another two windows after this window to do it, we won't be competing for the title. You know, Liverpool have got problems.
Did I see that Man United, that the Glazers were wanting 7 billion for Man United? I don't know if I saw that today.
Yeah.
It seemed like a... I mean, what were we talking Chelsea when we were talking 4 billion were we for Chelsea and whether they'd get that for it? Now we're talking 7 billion for Man United.
And I'd like my wife to invite like a bunch of supermodels into our bedroom every odd weekend. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, we can all wish for what we want and hope she's not listening to this. But the reality is, you know, Man United aren't. I don't think any football club's worth 7 billion to you. I mean, they talk about NFL franchises and whatever. Yeah, okay, you've seen some of them go recently at 4.5, 5. Mm-hmm. And Commanders, I think, are available for 7 or 8. But the beauty about the NFL, it's different. You don't, the owners don't need to put money into the team because it's a salary cap. It's, you know, whereas in England, you're paying 7 billion. And then like Todd Bowley, what you're seeing them do, you're going to have to then what, put 500-600 million into the team. Old Trafford needs a rebuild. So, you know, what, you're spending 10 billion? I'm not quite seeing. But then again, if someone had said to me, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 400 million for a club, or five, you know, inflation's inflation, prices, TV deals. I did see my beloved Apple, who I'm a big shareholder in, are looking to, I've always said this, trying to get in the Premier League rights. So that'll be interesting. I think a deal will be done at 4 to 5. It will definitely exceed Chelsea's deal because United are more than Chelsea, with all due respect. I think it'll be in the 4 to 5 bill range. I've seen Radcliffe, I think, wants it, the guy, the richest guy in England. So, yeah, look, at least the Glazers have realised that they're not welcome, they're not wanted, and you know, time to move on. So, who knows?
Well, it will have worked handsomely for them, you know, as they leave the shores.
What a payday. What a payday. Well, anyway, who am I to judge?
And Frank Lampard finally got the bullet today.
I have not been on any social media. I've had since 8:30 this morning Zoom calls, meetings back-to-back. This is the first time I've come up for air. I got 322 emails sat in my inbox that I'll have to get back onto after this. They've given them the bullet.
Yeah, they did.
Right.
Rich, what was it? 9 losses in 12. And I mean, it seems like there's something bigger wrong. There's not wrong problems to be fixed at Everton that go beyond the manager.
I mean, the owner gets hammered. But again, like, imagine putting 600 million into something and getting hammered. So what you can hammer him from is the people who spent his money. You couldn't hammer him for putting his money where his mouth is. As regards to Lampard, it was always I've never overly rated him anyway as a manager. I always spoke about that back in the day. But you couldn't turn down a job that big. So, but it was if someone had known, I'd gone, Frank, like, that is a hiding to nothing. Like, that could go one or two ways, super successful or a fucking disaster. So, you know, he's going to struggle to get, he'll be on Sky within 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
I was going to ask, what does that do for his career in terms of the job market?
Not a lot. I don't think he's going to be working anytime soon. He's had, what now, 4 jobs? Or no, 3.
Derby.
Chelsea and Everton.
Yeah.
Have I missed anyone?
It was Derby. Yeah, Chelsea, Everton, wasn't it?
So, yeah, you know, unless someone in the chat wants to take a chance, I don't know. I think he'll be in the pundits booth, that's for sure, for a while. And I see, you know, as you got other people like Stevie G, but at least Stevie G can say that he did something in Scotland that hadn't been done in time. And he has that. So he'll get another chance. Lampard got three chances. So, yeah, interesting. But are they bringing Duncan back in? Is that who's going to be in charge?
I haven't seen who they've given caretaker to yet. I haven't seen that announced, so I guess it'll be interesting to see.
Players, shocking. You can go on about recruitment and everything else, but you look at some of the players they have, it's shocking. There's no way they should lose 9 out of 12. Again, sometimes like players need to take responsibility. I always said that about my players, about other teams' players, and you go, no, that can't be happening. So, yeah. What else is interesting in football?
Yeah, it seems like there's a manager merry-go-round continues. So we had in the Championship, David Wagner came into Norwich, wins the first two. As much as it was Huddersfield, I always thought he was a really good manager at Huddersfield and did a great job there, and went back to Germany and didn't quite work out for him. So it's interesting to see him back in English football.
Probably worked well at Norwich, the former German coach, you know, a certain way, expectation, style. The right decision would probably, you know, Dean Smith. So yeah, don't be shocked to see Norwich like a steam train go through the playoffs.
And then Mick McCarthy hired at Blackpool, which seemed like...
Yeah, Oz told me about that earlier. That shocked me. Like, really shocked me. But I'm a Mick fan. I like Mick as a person. So hope he does a good job there.
It's been... I mean, after we taught them up, you know, quite rightly, because they had such a great season last year, I didn't actually realise how much they'd fallen. That Blackpool are second bottom.
Yeah, that's as well. Because I, for some reason, I thought they were flying. I've never watched the table in the Champ. But every time I saw the Football League show, it was like 3-3 and scoring goals at Burnley and doing really well. And so, but again, the Champ is like the same I'd say about Rotherham at the start of the season. They were flying at the start before one left. And again, I dare say they're probably down near there as well. So, you know, unforgiving league.
Bottom five is Wigan, 25 points, Blackpool, 26, Huddersfield, 26, Cardiff, 29, Rotherham, 31.
There you go. So, you know, and 2 months ago, West Brom were down there, and then they bring a brilliant manager in and
the 10th, 1 point off the playoffs.
Like, a bit like they're probably this year's Forest. Mm. You know, Forest were what? Second bottom of the league, and then end up getting promoted. So it's a funny league, unforgiving league, as we all know. And good luck to all the teams named.
Yeah, I haven't really looked at the table for a long time, but seeing Burnley and Sheffield United seem to be running away with it a little bit at the moment.
Like, Burnley are up. Yeah. Sheffield United won't be far behind them. Probably a good reflection of the two strongest squads in the Champ. You know, that there's a case of the bookies, the form, the squads, everything is turning up true. That, you know, both of those teams, if you'd said at the start of the season, who's got the two best squads in that league, them two would be up there.
Then it's 3 points between 4th and 10th, which is, no, sorry, yeah, 4th and 11th. 4 points between 3rd and 11th. So that's kind of similar to most of the leagues, so the way that the patterns are going at the moment is, you know, a couple of teams running away with things and then everybody else is pretty close to each other.
Yeah, I mean, Wednesday and Plymouth in League One are like a runaway train.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Plymouth, unbelievable job, I tell you, they've done. I mean, unbelievable. And as you said, recruiting players from you and doing that kind of, you know, they've lost players, they're bringing more players in. Fair play to them. Wednesday, never surprised. You know what I mean? Because again, I've always said this, eventually these clubs catch fire again. Mm-hmm. Paul Wall doing a magnificent job at Derby. They're like pretty much unbeatable since he's gone in there. Massive kudos to Michael Duff at Barnsley. I said that before when they'd beaten us, the late turnaround in the summer and the window. And then obviously you've got a lot of clubs, including us, in there chasing down a couple of spots. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, interesting times. And obviously Ipswich, who've gone, you know, invested in a big way and obviously fallen off second place. So they're going to need to go on a run. Don't write them off.
What do you put Plymouth's success down to? I was surprised when Steve Schumacher came in. I wasn't sure if he could continue the momentum.
I put it down to good infrastructure from Ryan from before, from Larry. An excellent assistant manager who stepped up to be manager. I'd always heard he was a phenomenal coach. I heard that already, which always helps your popular then. But sometimes assistant managers don't always make managers. We've made a mockery of that. Seamless transition. Ownership that believed in that transition instead of going outside. A team that's been on the up for 2 years, fell away last year very unfairly in the last game of the season. I think they fell out of top six and they'd been up there, didn't deserve that kick in the bollocks. So they probably had a bit of irritation inside about
trying to prove themselves this time
around. Yeah, correct. A good squad, some very good loan signings, reacting well every time they've lost a player. They lost like Finn Aziz to a bad injury. Whittaker was called back, I believe, by Swansea. You know, they've lost some very good players, but then they've replaced them well. Players like Ballymumba, who, you know, started well for us, then was useless at the end, whether that was us, whether that was him. There's a hell of a player in there. And look what he's done at Plymouth. He's, you know, been the best left-back, left-wing-back in League One. So kudos to him. So it's all worked very well, but it's a big club. There were 16,000 people there on Saturday, I believe. You know, they're not mugs. You know, let's not pretend they're like, oh, it's a small club and they're, you know, fighting above the this and that. No, it's a really well-run club. It's got good ownership. It's got good coaching. The stadium's been had money spent on it. The squad now they're starting to spend money on. So they're in there. You know, they're what would I call this? That moment where they're growing again. I've always said that bigger clubs, they the shit kicked down for a while. I've always said this about Bradford. And then they go through a golden period. So, you know, fair play to Plymouth. And yeah, I'd like to see them go up as champions.
And if we go into League Two, then Stevenage beats Leighton Orient at the weekend. It just keeps on pulling these out of the hat, doesn't he?
Baz went to the game because ours was off. He was just like, fucking, I've just come back from Stevenage. They battered them. I'm like, they battered you as Orient. I went, what? And he goes, hey, I battered them 3-0. I'm like, really? He goes, no. I'm just like Stevie Evans, white god. Like, seriously, like Phil Wallace. Like, if Stevie Evans wants you to buy players, listen to the man. Like, don't blow this, you know, because, you know, my advice to you is, like, he's made you a fortune this season in cups, in everything. Like, back the man. So now is not the time to be a cheapskate, because what an absolute miracle. I said it last week, and it sounds like the Stevie Evans show, but again, manager of the year.
Yeah, and they're 13 points clear of the playoffs at the moment.
They're going up.
No, two off the top with a game in hand.
They're going up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've told you. They're going up. I told you guys. I told your fans. I told you. You know, it's like one bad period at Gillingham didn't define Steve Evans. And I always said, don't forget the year before what he was doing with Gillingham. So, you know, tough circumstances. So, absolute miracle worker.
And talking of Gillingham, they got an away win. I think that they're starting to, they've been investing in the squad for sure in this window with the new owner. And one of our postponed games was actually against them. So I'm sure they'll be world beaters by the time that we actually come around to play them again. But they're only a couple of points adrift now.
Oh, good luck to them.
All right, let's see what else. We got some questions that came in. We had a question from Brian Murray asking about Mick McCarthy. So we talked about that. Actually, Brian also asked, is McCarthy a name that's ever cropped up for you at Peterborough over the years?
No.
We have a couple of unhappy fans of how their clubs are being run at the moment. And insights?
What are you going to say about my club?
So it's everybody is unhappy with their owners, no matter who the team is, I think, is the you know, the kind of trend here. Dale is unhappy with Doncaster, feels that there's really not a lot of ambition at the moment. They're just happy to build a sustainable club. And, you know, that's an interesting one, because at Bradford, we want to build a sustainable club. And at the end of the day, unless you've got somebody who can come in and backstop all your losses, I mean, while that may mean you don't seem as ambitious as what you might want to be, you want a healthy club at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's such a tough medium of, you know, look at the slaughter I occasionally get. You know, we just won a promotion, we got relegated, you know, we're still in potentially a promotion race, but, you know, you've got your certain fans with Pikey out written on their, you know, Twitter bios about me. So you just can't please everyone, can you? Whereas I would imagine 30 years ago, Peterborough always being, say, I don't know, 12th, 13th, League One, everyone would be like, well, that's the normal expectation. Win some, lose some, da-da-da-da-da. So it's really about what a fan expects. What are the expectations? Of course, my expectations are always we want to be promoted from League One. You know, we always want to do well at this level. Doncaster, you know, over the years have always been a good rival of ours. And, you know, the League One, you know, they've been up in the Championship. They did really well on Ryan back in the day. But they're paying the bills. If they're, you know, if their owner, sometimes an owner just doesn't have it, but they're doing their best. And it doesn't mean that they should have to sell the club. It's their club. You know, like people get upset, you know, about whatever else, but it's like, no, they own it. Yes, I know the fans own clubs, but there are owners who own the club who pay the bills of the club. So, you know, cut them some slack, because as we know, it's been tough the last couple of years. So I would say just come out there. If you're not going into the conference, if you're not going down Scunthorpe Park, all the stuff going on there, be thankful sometimes when you see some of the stories out there and some of the stuff going on and whatever else. So, you know, and then in the case of a Gillingham, you get someone wealthy comes in and buys a club, and then there's an uplift, and then there's players and signings, and it's exciting again until it's not. That's just the life of a football fan. That's just the way it is. At the end of the day, support your club.
Now, this isn't aimed at Doncaster at all. This is just a general question. Do you see that owners come in who perhaps underestimate what it takes to maintain a football club in terms of the finances? So they come in with ideas and maybe, you know, they scrape together the fee to buy the club, and then reality hits when they hit the ground and perhaps it's not quite as easy and it's more expensive, and they don't have them. They're not independently wealthy in that way that allows them just to write off all these investments, you know, to do that.
Of course. You will have that as well. You'll have some people think, well, I can go in and do a Millen Mandridge. I can go in and buy a club, flip it, make money, even though Millen put money in. I can do it a certain way. And he did it 3 times. His system worked for him. So some people will go, well, we're, you know, crypto company, we're going to buy a club, we're going to take it up the leagues, we're going to do this, we're going to flip the value, and, you know, fans are going to be happy, we're going to profit. And that's great, but it all works that way. And then the flip to that is, if it doesn't work that way, it's a, could be a fucking disaster. And I'm not saying that. So you're absolutely correct. Sometimes people bite off more than they can chew. So that's always a concern for any fan when you get somebody promising things and failing to deliver. And yeah, fans will be angry with me that I promised to try and do this and that, but a lot of the time I have delivered as best I can. So proof's in the pudding.
So we have a question from Will, who is an Arsenal fan. My question for the podcast as an Arsenal fan is, do you think bias happens? And the context is, Will feels that Arsenal's been getting a lot of fines that other clubs don't get. People pointing out Arteta for his sideline antics as if it's new and others haven't been doing it for years. Is there a bias or is he the biased one? Will asks.
I like Mikel Arteta. My wife loves him from watching that, the Amazon documentary and whatever else. And he's just a passionate guy. I don't mind my manager getting fined for being a little bit passionate. And he's in a position where for 2 years he's had the shit kicked out of him for people trying to sack him and calling for him to be sacked, and dealt with some big personalities. He's had Piers Morgan coming after him. He's had all of this stuff. And now he's finally in a title battle. And it's the master versus the student with Guardiola and him. So his passion is just coming to the surface. So I think some slack needs to be cut. But at the same time, he needs to come at that himself. It's very unusual for a Spanish man. They're usually very calm. They're usually very, you know, keep their cool. He's been in Britain a long time, so I guess some of that's got into him. Yeah. But I don't criticize him for that at all. I like the fact he's passionate. So as an Arsenal fan, take the fines, take some of the shit negativity. Let me tell you right now, since beating United yesterday to today, I don't see any negativity regards fines and stuff like that. All I see is positive stuff.
Who pays the fines? Is it the individual, or is it the club will pay on their behalf?
The manager usually pays the fine if it's on him. If the club feel, you know what, we should pay that, they'll pay that. So it just depends on what's the fine for. Was there merit in it? Do you as a club think there's merit and go, hey, gaff, you were wrong, you're out of order, you're gonna have to pay the piper here. Now if my manager's won 10 in a row and he's done something, I'll probably pay the fine because I'm so fucking happy he's won all those games.
All right, well, let's leave it there for another week. I know you've got to run, continue getting through those 330 emails and countless meetings for the rest of the afternoon.
But yeah, it's busy.
Yeah, I do want to say, you know, over the course of the rest of the season, we do everything we possibly can to keep this as weekly as we can, but you've got a lot of travel coming up with visiting a lot of universities. We're going to get as many episodes as we can out there. We know we want to be as consistent as possible.
And people always say we only come on when we win. Mm-hmm. But I didn't come on last week after Port Vale, did I? That's when we call it. You know, that would have been a perfect time to be like, oh, we won a game. Oh,
yeah, we're hoping to do it Tuesday, the day after, weren't we?
Yeah. No, it doesn't work that way. And you're right, Phil. And a lot of it's my fault and whatever else. But it's sometimes we're going to have to be, you know, was it bi-weekly every 2 weeks or whatever else. But we will try and do it every week as best we can. So bear with us, fans. It's not like it's inconsistent. You're always going to have plenty. We're going to still end up hitting 40-odd episodes for this season, you know what I mean, which is a lot of podcast content. So again, very thankful for all the listeners. Have a great week, and we'll catch up with you next week, hopefully.
All right. Talk to you soon, everyone. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, guys.